big show coming up for you here today. And I always say it's a big show, but today I really mean it. It is a big show. It is our Super Bowl preview plus, I mean, we get into a ton of topics here, with Adam Rank of the NFL Network, with Kendall Valenzuela of Fantasy Life, with CeeDee Lamb, Derrick Henry, Christian McCaffrey. Tons of great conversations coming up for you in today's episode. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And I mean that because we've got a big show ahead of us. And as you can see, if you're watching us live on YouTube right now, you can see it's a hell of a day to talk ball because we've got my legit good friend.
Legit friends.
Real life friend.
Yep.
NFL Network's own Adam Rank, host of the Sick Podcast with Adam Rank. Adam Rank, what's going on, buddy?
What's happening? We're such good friends. I did an Irish hello your wedding. Which is what he was afraid I was going to do. Like, that was a legitimate concern.
It was.
For anybody who's unaware, is that the Irish hello is similar to the Irish goodbye. The only thing being is that you tell people that you are there. Like, no, I'm there. Like, I could be doing it right now. Like, I'm texting somebody right now being like, no, I'm at Radio Row. I'm over by the Threads booth. How do you not see me? I'm wearing a shirt with The Rock on it. How can you not see me? That is an Irish hello.
Yeah. Honestly, I was more nervous you would Irish hello this podcast than Irish hello my wedding. No offense. I mean, I was really happy you were at my wedding, but, you know, this is a big guest list.
Yeah, this is
this. I was like relying on people, you know, other people relying on you to be here for this show.
Right.
So can I tell a quick story about my wedding with Adam Rank? It's one of my favorite memories from the wedding. And then we'll get into the, you know, the football stuff, whatever. So Rank attends my wedding. Obviously.
Yes.
And my wife's cousin, Zach, who's a lovely guy, but, you know, he likes to indulge. Let's just leave it at that. He comes up to me at the brunch the next day and says, hey, I saw Adam Rank was at the wedding. I thought about going up to him and saying, you owe me $200 because you were wrong about this, that, and the other in fantasy or whatever. And I was like, no, Zach, I talked to Rank last night. You actually did that. So it is one of my favorite memories from the wedding. But people didn't tune into this show just to hear me talk through.
I did.
Well, you know.
I tweeted this out. That's what I was doing. Okay. I didn't want to look disinterested, but I had to tweet out the link. So now that everybody who's joining us from Twitter.
Exactly. Hey, now everybody. That people are actually watching this since the Rank bump got in here. Here's what's going to happen on this show today. In the first segment, Rank is going to join me for a Super Bowl preview. Then we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to talk through Bears special season in 2025 and who could maybe be next year's Chicago Bears. Then the show's going to get even bigger because Rank is going to say goodbye.
Right.
He's going to go. Then Fantasy Life's Kendall Valenzuela is going to join me for the next segment to talk through Seahawks, Jaxon Smith-Njigba's year three leap, and who could be next year's JSN. Then we're going to close out the show with three great interviews with CeeDee Lamb, Derrick Henry, Christian McCaffrey. Like I said,
whoa,
it's a packed show.
This is a show.
But let's get into it.
I'm
here.
Blessed to be out. By the way, you know what the best part of this whole thing too is?
What is?
Kendall gave me her phone number. And it's real because I notice on the text chain with everybody, I'm like, oh, that was the real number. Yeah. Okay, you never know.
That's great. I mean, I'm pretty nervous about giving people my phone number because I'm a good texter. I'm a terrible emailer. So apologies to all the people out there whose emails I have ignored. Let's get into the Super Bowl here. We've got Seahawks, 4.5-point favorites, taking on the Patriots, 45.5-point over under. Rank, when you look at this game, when the Patriots have the ball, what's a matchup that you think people should be paying attention to that they should note?
You know, I'm going to see if the Patriots are going to be able to establish the run. And that's one of the things that we saw at the end of the season. I was talking to Ramondre Stevenson, talking to him.
Name drop, baby.
Talking to him. I saw him at opening night.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, hey, like, I traded for you during, like, I had to do that, dumb.
Sure.
I legitimately did. And he was so good at the end of the season. I think that one of the things that you need to rely upon is the ability to run the football. And I think that if New England is going to be successful, they got to go out there and establish that run with Ramondre Stevenson. He was on a string of like scoring touchdowns. He had two games in the final regular season game of the season and did a really nice job. He's got to get the ball moving because otherwise for Drake May, he has been taking, I don't want to say he was taking a beating,
but
they were getting after him during the playoffs. And I don't think that Seattle is any slouch as well. Got to be able to run the football. So that's the one I'm looking out for the most.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's not been a smooth ride in the postseason for Drake May. And I think establishing that ground game could help. And, you know, it's funny that, you think typically, especially when we do fantasy content, it's going to be, oh, that young rookie running back is going to be taken off in the second half of the season. And Travion Henderson definitely had a few moments in the back half of the season, but they've really gone back to the veteran here. I mean, 90% plus of the snaps and the touches in the AFC Championship game went to Ramondre Stevenson, and he's been cooking right now. Like, what's been your read on this Patriots backfield situation?
Yeah, it's one of those things, because coming into the year, I was very bullish on Henderson and was like getting him on all our teams. You know, and I felt like, and I had to wear it, you know, for so long, because we were like, oh, when's Henderson taking off? Sure. When is this going to be a thing? Finally happened at some point. I'm sorry, somebody pick up my kids too, by the way. That was the alarm to know, like, hey, I got to go pick up my son from elementary school. Hopefully somebody is there today.
Somebody's got a handle on that, I would imagine.
Somewhat confident that's going to be happening.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'll be getting a teacher, call from the teacher here in a moment. But they really, like, I like the way Henderson plays, but again, Josh McDaniels, I know that for years people have always been like, oh, the Patriots running back situation is a mess. It's a nightmare. It's like, honestly, like, they're pretty consistent with what they like to do. And it's one of those times where Josh McDaniels is trying to run the ball a certain way and use a certain, you know, use a certain skill set with what Stevenson gives them. So you've just seen that if he's gone to it. Once the pattern has been identified, again, I think it's like a real easy. I know, again, people are like, oh, I can't trust the Patriots back. Then you really can. They love to run the football. They want to establish the run. And eventually you will find it out. You got to be a little bit patient. But I think that Stevenson was just being very effective down the stretch. And you know what? When that happens, they're going to continue to run with him.
A lot of times in these gap scheme offenses, it typically does go towards that veteran because they're just a little bit more confident reading things out. And I think we've seen that definitely in the postseason with Ramondre Stevenson. When you look at the pass game for New England, I mean, either way, it's going to be a tough matchup. That Seahawks defense is so good. The Seattle secondary, they just basically give you a nickel to everything. They don't let you dictate personnel. And you mentioned Josh McDaniels. I think he's done a wonderful job with, like, the tight ends, getting multiple slot receivers involved. I can't quite pick out like a mismatch that goes in the favor of the Patriots here in the pass game. The one thing I might think about, Rank, is, you know, Tariq Woolen, good perimeter corner, but he can also give you big plays as well. And Kayshon Booty's been a guy who's popped up for some of those big plays as a perimeter wideout. So, again, I don't know if the advantage necessarily goes to New England there, but it's definitely a matchup to watch.
That is the only matchup. And like, when you're sitting there trying to figure out a person who could score a touchdown at any moment or at any time, so to speak, that has been the guy that I've been identifying. Like, if you're trying to find one who's kind of an outlier, who's not JSN, who's not one of the big well-known names, I think that is something that they're going to try to exploit. We saw it too. Like, Drake May makes one of the best passes of the season to Kayshon Booty this year in the playoffs. That is going to be something I think there's going to be, they're probably going to try to take advantage of it, because you always just try to find the space. Find the space. Where can you find the space? Again, but the problem is the Seahawks defense, it's very difficult to find that space.
Yeah. Oh, it is. And they, especially in zone coverage, they just smother those windows. I've been saying to people all week, it's like they just move like an amoeba. Move as one. But that's not necessarily to take away from some of the individual great players that are on that unit, but it just goes to show, like, they're dialed into the system. Their communication is right and tight. One thing I might note too is, from a man coverage perspective, I do think slot corner, you know, Devin Witherspoon, who's more than just your typical slot corner, but he's a guy who I would say probably is at his best when he's closing those zone coverage windows. But in one-on-one man coverage situations, when he's lined up across Stephon Diggs, I still think Diggs, while he's not the player that he was, he's such a good route runner. He's such a good technician. I would look for at least a few clutch catches from Stephon Diggs in this matchup as well.
Yeah, I'm curious which way Drake May is going to look when he gets into situations where he needs somebody to bail him out.
Yeah.
Because those times happen, you know, and especially in a game of this magnitude. So I'm really curious, is Stephon Diggs going to be that player? Is he going to be the guy? This is his moment. Like, we were sitting there Monday night too and watching the crowd that was gathered around him. Now, obviously, everybody's talking to him because of the notoriety of his Cardi B and all this stuff. But he's still an excellent receiver. Like, that is the one thing that, like, it is kind of a joke because everybody knows, like, same thing with, like, the kids. My daughter, who loved Travis Kelce and all this stuff, you're like, you know, he's actually, like, an excellent football player too.
Yeah, right.
So in a game like this, you do look for your superstar. You do look for – this is why Stephon Diggs is in this situation. This is why he's had a cup of coffee in Houston and bounced around. He's been in a number of places. This is his moment. So I think they're going to try to find ways to get him the ball.
Yeah, as a receiver, like that technician aspect of his game just ages so gracefully. So, yeah, he's clearly wanted to be in this game for quite some time. He's in this game. Going to be very fascinating to see what his performance looks like. Again, notice we didn't say anything about the Patriots offensive line because that's a pretty rough mismatch that definitely favors the Seattle Seahawks. But I'll also use that to transition us to the other side of the ball here. When the Seahawks have the ball, again, the clear mismatch is certainly Seattle's defensive line versus New England's offensive line. That being said, Seattle has had a right guard problem all season. Bradford has been a little bit of a mess at that spot, even though the offensive line is certainly better than it was last year. I think he's going to find himself across from Milton Williams quite often. And when you look at the numbers.
Look at the numbers.
Look at the numbers, baby.
Look at the numbers.
Look at the numbers, baby. When you look at those numbers, they tell you that the Patriots run defense, when Milton Williams is on the field, it's just a totally different unit. So if Seattle's going to be able to find explosive runs with Kenneth Walker, or they're going to be able to give Sam Darnold some time, like Bradford's going to have his best game of the season because Milton Williams has been everything they could have hoped for as a free agent acquisition.
Not only that, but when him and Christian Gonzalez are on the field at the same time, they're undefeated this season. I believe the mark is 12-0. It's great in tandem because you have a guy who gets to the quarterback paired with a cornerback who shuts down opposing wide receivers. And we don't know how much they're going to be able to shadow him with everything. But Milton Williams has been so effective for this run game. And I was thinking about this too, because when Kenneth Walker became the number one guy, obviously with Zach Charbonnet being out, for fantasy purposes, you look at that, you're like, oh, finally, we have one running back that we can rely on. But they do want to go out there. They do like to use a host of running backs to be effective. I know that it's terrible for us, but that's when they've been their most effective.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Kenneth Walker's done a really nice job. I'm curious to see how this plays out, how they're going to be able to get him, how they're going to get the ball into his hands. Because when I look at this matchup, when I look at the Seahawks offense, I feel like it's got to be somebody outside of the regulars, outside of JSN, outside of Kenneth Walker. Now, obviously, in the NFC Championship game, we saw Cooper Kupp go out there and get a dagger. We've seen some of the other guys step up as well. I really do believe that it's the secondary players of the Seahawks who are going to have to go out there and make plays in this one.
Who's like an unsung hero that people could look for on the Seahawks offense?
You know, I know it is hacky, but it is for a reason. I do believe like Cooper Kupp, like it's no mistake. It's not an accident. And we see this too. Like, not that he's, you know, not trying during the regular season, but like Cooper Kupp is a former Super Bowl MVP. Like, this is his moment. This is an opportunity for him. And we saw it. He's still got a little bit of juice. Like, you got to, you know, it's like one of those movies where they're like, hey, like, oh, they pulled me back in for the big game once again. But like, this is why you're here. And this is why you are so integral to the Seattle Seahawks, for the leadership, to let everybody know what's going on, what to expect. Those are the kind of things that you're able to talk to with your wide receiver group and with your teammates. Like, listen, this is going to be different. Half time's longer. This is how you do it. I've been here a couple of times. This is how you adjust through these kind of things. It has to be somebody who breaks through. And I just, again, it's an easy take just to say Cooper Kupp. So I'll take it. I'll take the easy way out of it.
Hey, no problem taking the layup there. And from a layup perspective, too, I think that A.J. Barner might play a big role as a layup guy here, because Sam Darnold, it's funny. It's not the pressure for Sam Darnold. It's what type of pressure you get.
You know,
you show him one thing, then you give him another. Like, you're playing games, stunts, simulated pressures, things of that nature. And we've seen that with this Patriots defense in the postseason. But the best way to do that is to have a guy that you can, hey, all right, there, two guys went with Jaxon Smith-Njigba down the field. You know, Cooper Kupp's running more of an outbreaker. I need a simple answer here. A.J. Barner in the flat. We've seen him have some run after catch plays. Also, hey, maybe a couple of tush-push moments for A.J. Barner.
Yeah, so
he's my unsung hero pick for the Seahawks offense.
That's such a great call, and I wish I would have thought of that, because also with Christian Gonzalez, there's opportunities to have him go one-on-one with JSN.
Totally.
And then you double. Mm-hmm. Then you're able to double Cooper Kupp or somebody else, and really just opens up your defense and really allows you. And I think that's one of the reasons why New England's been able to be so successful when Christian Gonzalez is healthy and available, is because even if he's not shadowing a guy, because even if it's not, like if he ends up being on one of the other wide receivers, then you're doubling JSN. You don't need him to do it. Like, it's a nice problem to have if you're the New England Patriots. And for Seattle, for Clint Kubiak, it's going to be about finding out those mismatches.
Weaponizing JSN, trying to beat some of those man coverage moments. The tight end can be a big part of it. That big power slot receiver like a Cooper Kupp can be a part of it as well. All right, let's wrap it up here with our MVP and our final score here, Rank. Who's your Super Bowl MVP? What's your final score? Let's hear it.
I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks winning this one 23-20 with Sam Darnold being your MVP.
Good. No, okay, it's incredible because I'm going to go Seahawks 24-20.
No, you're wrong.
But, oh,
dead wrong.
We're going to really fight over 1 point.
We are. That point could be really big for some people.
For some people in the desert. Yeah, my MVP pick is Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I mean, it would be super off-brand for me to come in here and talk about, like, oh, this,
I couldn't
the
see.
Other.
Yeah, I just want it to be Sam Darnold. Just because, like, I think that whether this is right or not, if the Seahawks win, I could see Sam Darnold throwing for, like, even if Sam Darnold threw for 114 yards, sure, they would give it to him. Because he once played for the Jets. You know what I'm saying? Like, he deserves it. Like, Peyton Manning's first Super Bowl win.
Oh, boy.
Only, well, I don't even really credit him for a win as much as, like, they just survived.
Oh, buckling, folks.
But at the same time, like, Dom Rhodes was the guy. Like, watching that game, Dom Rhodes was the guy who was giving the Bears defense the most fits. They had figured out Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning got lucky because somebody slipped in coverage. I'm just saying,
this is like 2012 era Adam Rank stuff.
It happened though, like it really legitimately happened. That's one of the things too. Like you're like, hey, Peyton Manning. Did Peyton Manning? Somebody was it was corrected by somebody. I go, Peyton Manning's won a Super Bowl. Like, well, he won two. I'm like, dang, he was on the feet. I guess.
Yeah.
That second one with Denver, like that was.
Oh, he was there.
That was finally one where, like, I was even sitting in that crowd at that game because it was here in San Francisco. And I'm like, they're still going to give the MVP to Peyton Manning just because, like, it's just the way the voters work.
Yeah.
It's a ceremonial thing.
Taking the quarterback is the safe pick, but I think the moral of the story here is going through the matchups, going through the unsung heroes, going through our final score. It's like, I do think Seattle's the better team, but I think this is going to be closer than people.
I really want a reason to pick the Patriots, and if I wouldn't anger all the Broncos fans, I might have taken it. But no, I'm just kidding.
Well,
it wouldn't shock me if they win because, like, it's one of those things where I love to fade the public. People who follow me, though, I love to fade the public. And this was actually an opportunity. I had an opportunity to fade the public on NFL.com, and I didn't take it. I'm like, I'm not committed to it.
Not committed to it.
I think that Seattle should win this.
I think they should as well. But if they don't, it'll be because of Milton Williams. You heard it here first, so you can be the smartest person at your Super Bowl party. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to make you smarter. In the next segment, we're going to talk about who could be next year's Bears in addition to why this Bears team was so special. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. And anytime you could sit down with Adam Rank, it would be a mistake to not let him gloat about the analyze the 2025 Chicago Bears. So, Rank, as I mentioned, you host the Sick Podcast with Adam Rank, the Bears show. I've actually been on the show before, hell of a time. Sir. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
This Bears season, it had to be fun to cover. It was super fun to watch. As we're showing on the screen right now, massive offensive improvement. In 2024, they were 29th in EPA per play. I mean, look at the numbers there. Again, look at the numbers.
Oh, look at the numbers.
Not that great here in 2025. Or, well, I guess last year in 2025. It's hard to say. You know, 2025 season's not over yet. They were 9th in EPA per play. So literally from one of the worst offenses in the league to a top 10 unit. What were your thoughts here? Like, how did this happen? And what really stands out to you across the board, which was a great improvement on the offense?
Yeah, it was one of those things, and looking back at the season in general, when you're like, listen, if you would have told me back in August they were going to win 11 games, which is actually what I predicted, 11 games, two wins over the Packers, including a playoff win, you would have been like, I would have taken it. And then to get into the NFC divisional round, have an opportunity to beat the Rams and not do it, I really feel like they're like, I wanted to win that. Like, I think it's legitimate to be like, you know, I wanted to win that game. But I think the biggest improvement for this team started obviously with Ben Johnson. But beyond that, you know, going out there and really solidifying the interior of their offensive line. They signed Drew Dahlman. They traded for two guards, including Joe Tooney, Jonas Jackson. So you go out there and automatically the interior of your line is improved. You have Darnell Wright already out there at right tackle. And really the biggest issue was left tackle, which Ozzie Trapillo looked like he was going to be the left tackle of the future, but now he's got a patella tendon injury. I know PFF's like, he's going to be great next year. I'm like, bro, he might not even play. Like, he's got to, is he going to be even able to play? But they really just did a nice job of, you know, establishing a run and really just going all in offensively. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at what the Bears were able to do, he is so, like, they did such a great job because they obviously had DJ Moore. They used the 9th overall pick a couple of years ago on Rome Odunze. And still, when they went into the draft last year, even with Cole Kmet there, they went out there and they got Colston Loveland. Mm-hmm. They got Luther Burden III. And then they found an absolute dime in Kyle Manungai in the 7th round. And so they put so much emphasis on making sure the offense was good. And they did. And they're like, hey, Dennis Allen, like, yeah, sorry, you got to kind of work with what you got going on right there. But, like, we're going all in on the offense. And I think it's something that I wish, or I don't wish it because I'm glad they didn't do it. But, like, when you look at what the Commanders did, for instance, and, like, your counter, you just had a generational run with a rookie quarterback. And your idea was, like, we're going to go get Deebo Samuel and Austin Eckler. I'm like, what year do you think that this is?
Yeah, right.
Like, what are you doing? They should have done whatever they could to go out there. Why weren't you drafted? I don't remember. I'm assuming they had a first-round pick.
Yeah. Josh, like, Connerly, right tackle. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's fine. Okay, you're going to the offensive line, but it's like.
But still, that backfield, like, they just they traded away Brian Robinson. They're like, we're going to start a seventh-round rookie. It's going to be Austin Eckler again. And I was with you on the pass catchers. Like, this was driving me crazy all offseason. It was like, well, Noah Brown has been hurt as the third wide receiver. I'm like, brother, we should not be like just Noah Brown's our third. No disrespect. Like, Noah Brown should not just be our third receiver. Like, we should have a little bit more from that outside receiver position. I think your point about the Bears is, it's a phrase that Nate kept saying all offseason, was no half measures. Like, we're going to go all in on this group. We're going to surround this guy with young talent, and they're all going to grow together. And I think you felt that, right? Like, early on in the season, there was certainly some growing pains. Shoot, even late in the season, there was still some growing pains from these rookies, which I think has to make you pretty optimistic for what's going to be going on in 2026 and beyond as these young guys sort of grow up here.
That's why I feel like it's going to be different from what the Commanders went through last season. Everybody's like, well, they fell off. I'm like, well, when Dan Campbell and his team started taking off in Detroit, they kept getting better. And they're still a really good team, even though they missed the playoffs this season. They're still an excellent team. And I think the Bears are going to be in the same conversation. I'm not even throwing out, like, everybody's like, well, defensively, they got to draft an edge and they got to do that. I'm like, you know what? When they draft a left tackle with their first overall, with their first pick, don't be shocked.
Yeah.
Or if they do something screwball again, it makes too much sense. I remember last year, I was one of the few people who was defending the Colston Loveland draft pick because, as a matter of fact, in my mock draft, so I'll do it this April too, my mock draft with the twist is not a, this is who I think is going where, this is a piece of, this is who you should be taking.
A little fan fiction.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. And my number one thing for the Buffalo Bills was, like, you should draft Luther Burden III. Mm, mm-hmm. You should draft. And then when he went to the Bears, I'm like, oh my God, I'm stoked on this. I love
that didn't happen.
I'm like, I'm so glad that they didn't take my advice. He would have been awesome in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Sean McDermott might still have a job. Who knows? And I also said, because I didn't think Colston Loveland would get to 10, but I wrote in the piece, if he's there, like, he would make a lot of sense for the Bears as well. If the Bears ended up with Colston Loveland, that would make a lot of sense too, because I felt like Jacksonville, I thought should have drafted Tyler Warren. Like, in this piece, going back and watching, Jacksonville stays in their spot, takes Tyler Warren. And then I had Carolina taking Colston Loveland, which obviously Tet McMillan was really good. So that's not a whiff. But I'm like, but thinking back to, like, what Greg Olsen meant to that organization, I'm like, why don't you just take the next Greg Olsen?
Yeah.
Then the Bears drafted the next Greg Olsen. They just don't go through the thing where you trade him to Carolina.
Yeah, don't trade whatever him for, like, a third round pick.
Don't ever trade him. Don't trade him. Keep Colston Loveland.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what's really exciting. Again, we kind of touched on why I'm so optimistic about the 26 Bears is you mentioned it. It's like they're going to stave off some what could be natural regression, the one scores, stuff like that. It's these young players that they're betting on. I think they'll continue to stock the arsenal. But what I'm curious is your opinion on who's going to be maybe next year's Bears. I always love this exercise because it's so stupid and it doesn't work out and it's pointless, but we love to do it for content anyways. Who's going to be that team that goes from a bottom 10 offense? And again, we'll use EPA per play here.
It's got to be a bottom 10.
Offense.
My team is still there. Good.
Here's the bottom 10 offenses from the 2025 season. We have Cleveland, and this is from the bottom. Cleveland Browns, Las Vegas Raiders, Tennessee Titans, New York Jets, Minnesota Vikings, New Orleans Saints, Miami Dolphins, Houston Texans, Carolina Panthers, and the Los Angeles Chargers coming in 10th from the bottom here. So I give you those teams. Who's going to do a Bears you know, based on personnel, coaching changes, whatever, go from the bottom 10 to the top 10 this year.
This is cheating. Because I was thinking of a team anyways, and I'm so glad that they locked in at number 10 so I can show you the Chargers.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chargers are too easy. It's like too easy. When you think about it, because like everybody already is like, oh, I have a dynasty super flex league which has Justin Herbert. Could not be more thrilled.
Totally.
Could not be more thrilled. And I'm looking at this list too. Not surprisingly, the Giants aren't on this list. But I do, you know what? I'm really curious to see what happens in New Orleans and what Kellen Moore's, because like Kellen Moore was able to do so much with so little. What are they going to do in the offseason? Like, what could their offseason look like if they go out there and take a similar approach to what the Bears did, where you're like, we're going all in on offense, whether we're good or not, we're going to be fun because we're going to be scoring a lot of points. And, you know, there's an easier path to the playoffs in the NFC South right now than there is in some of the other divisions. Like what the Bears did in the NFC North was pretty miraculous, because even the teams that didn't make the playoffs were still pretty good. So I think that the Saints are low-key a sneaky one to look out for.
We are so on the same. You could tell that this guy, you know, helped me grow up in my career, because we're so on the same page here. Because number one, yes, the correct answer is the Chargers, and they're 10th. And I was saying when I did this list, I sent it to the producer, I was like, oh, yes, thank God.
The Chargers are
the correct answer.
So easy.
Mike McDaniel coming in there, it's going to matter a lot for this team. But yeah, my sneaky pick was going to be the New Orleans Saints, because, I mean, Tyler Shuck really showed me a lot last year.
I kind of like him.
I was very skeptical of just the profile, the age, the experience, the whole deal. But one thing that just continues to stand out, and I said it yesterday on Football 301, the things that stands out to me with Tyler Shuck is just his ability to just drop back and from the far hash be able to push the ball outside the numbers. That's like good old-fashioned quarterbacking. And I don't know what the ceiling is on Shuck. You know, again, he's an older player. How much development is there? But, man, I know for sure that the ceiling on his surrounding cast can be a lot higher. Right. I love Chris Olave coming off of a great season. He's going to be back. They want to extend him. He should have another wonderful year this year. But they have a top-10 pick. There's some really interesting receiving prospects. You know, could a Carnell Tate fit in across from Chris Olave? A couple guys that can play inside out. The run game was kind of a total zero last year, even though the offensive line has its talent. Like, are we doing the Alvin Kamara thing again where he's half retired, half not?
Pick a spot. Like, retire or not.
Don't
like
be talking about drinking pina coladas in the middle of the NFL season, okay?
And, like, if I get traded to a winner, like, what are you doing? Like, if that already shows me, like, where's the commitment?
Exactly. So I just think there's so much potential there with the Saints here. They're a really fun answer to me. I'm already going to say, like, listeners to this podcast, get ready to be probably uncomfortable with the amount we're going to talk about the Saints in the offseason, because I do think it's a really fun unit to talk about. I think this offense could have some fun additions. But the rest of the list, too, I mean, Tennessee, I think they need to add a ton.
That's another
a ton to the pass-catching core. But if they add a bunch of players, they go all in on that, I think we could see like a mini one-year bump with Brian Daboll.
I really want to see what happens with the Tennessee Titans, because Cam Ward showed me some things. You're like, okay, like this guy's got some talent and he could do some things. At the same time, they gotta go all in. Like the Bears have this, like, I don't want to say it's formula, because it seems so overly simplistic to be like, yeah, just surround them with talent. Like, what's the big deal? But it's like teams aren't doing it.
Yeah.
Like Washington didn't do it. Like what they thought they did it, but you absolutely did not do it. You gotta go, it's gotta be full sends. Not anything else. Like, commit to it. Like, you have a brand new head coach. Mm-hmm. Brian Daboll hopefully will be there for at least a year or more than a year, depending on what happens. He's going to be a candidate once again if this team does get rolling. But go out there and put everything. Your first four picks should be offensive players. I don't care what position, but they got to be offensive players. And you got to go out there and you got to build it. And free agency, they got to be active. Don't be foolish, but like,
right. Be responsible.
Be responsible. Hey, you don't go out there and see if there's any veterans you can swing deals for.
No doubt. And the more I look at the list, there's a lot of intriguing options here. Raiders with Kubiak, Vikings if they can get a quarterback. Would love to break them all down and do a little, you know, fun fan fiction about how they are this year's Bears, but we don't have the time to do it. We got to say goodbye to Adam Rank here. We're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, say goodbye to Rank. Let him go about his very busy schedule as a true NFL celebrity here. And then we're going to have Kendall Valenzuela join the show. Ooh. Very excited. We're going to take a quick break.
Upgrade right there.
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
Huge upgrade.
I mean, you were okay. Yeah,
that's fine.
I do think she's going to be much better, though. Yeah.
100%.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We'll welcome Kendall to the show. We'll get into that right after this. All right, very excited now to, you know, say goodbye to Rank. And get, there's enough of that already. We got a real professional on the show here. We've got Kendall Valenzuela from Fantasy Life. Kendall, you've been on the show before.
Yes.
But never in person.
No.
How's it going?
This is nice, by the way. I need people to know that this is, like, good stuff over here. Like, you're living well.
It's nice. Isn't it so nice to be in person with people?
Yes.
Like doing the remote stuff, it's great. The vMix, the Zoom, whatever. It's just not the
we
same
need
as
being we needed
in the
this.
Same.
We needed
we
this.
We really needed this.
We did. We did.
I did. I, you know, never usually leave my one little box. Like, how often am I just in that one little box?
Of course.
During the regular season especially. It's almost like really draining to think about. But you know what does give me some life? This year's Seattle Seahawks team.
Same here, dude.
You're a Seahawks fan. You love this team. What's it been like kind of experiencing the 2025 Seahawks now here at the Super Bowl?
I'm on a high right now that I don't want to come off of, obviously. And so it's, I've been to the merch store twice now. I'm just going to let people know it's disgusting, greedy, to say the least. But I've been to the merch store twice. I plan to go back two more times, probably looking at JSN jerseys for when he wins MVP on Sunday. But it's been so fun because honestly, in my wildest dreams, hand up to be transparent, I did not even think that a season like this could happen with the Seahawks under Sam Darnold. I thought that really good things could happen when Clint Kubiak came on, but I thought that that was going to be capped at some point with the level that Sam Darnold could give them. So to be able to see them here now was just a fantastic turnaround with that defense and everything. So I'm riding high, and I'm just gonna go with it the whole rest of the way. You know, a few more days, and then hopefully Sunday I'm not crying. Don't call, don't text if they lose. But you know,
no problem.
It's fine.
I'll lose your number in that case. But listen, where were you at with like the upheaval of this offense? Because I think if you go back for a lot of folks in the media, I'll say, you know, maybe not myself. I wouldn't say I was like super optimistic about Sam, but I was like Sam curious. I could kind of get their point about why they were willing to wipe the slate clean, move on from Geno Smith, but that was not an opinion that was shared by a lot of folks. There was a lot of criticism about moving on from Geno and just kind of that whole era of Seahawks football, DK Metcalf trade as well. Like, completely forget about
DK Metcalf. Yeah, people forget DK Metcalf was a Seahawk.
On this team, literally. Very recently, where were you at like when all of that happened? Because it was a lot for Seahawks fans.
It was a lot. I thought some type of regression was coming, or at least being stagnant for a little while, because I thought to myself, okay, Sam Darnold, but for what it's worth with Sam Darnold, like when people come up to me and they're like, oh, Jets fans must be pissed. I'm like, I don't know, because Sam Darnold was not good with the Jets. Like we can just say that. But Vikings fans have to be a little bit sick to their stomach right now because you have the season that you did. And I understand that you go into the playoffs and he can't get it done there. But it's not like he did not give them a full season of great play where we were looking at Justin Jefferson and all these guys. So to me, when he came over, I thought that it was going to be more of a bridge quarterback situation.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bridge quarterback where they wait because we know that the quarterbacks coming into the draft this year, and at the time, you know, they know that they're not necessarily the best. Mm-hmm. And that if they needed to tank, I don't think they would ever get to the number one overall pick to get a Fernando Mendoza. But that was in my mind of like, are they bridging this to try and go in 2 years to get a different quarterback? And for what, you know, for everything that it's worth, once they brought Clint Kubiak in, it was just like, okay, no. Then they have this kind of year where, you know, you see JSN, you know, go outside a lot more. Not the slot merchant that people used to call him. And so DK Metcalf getting out of there, I think, in hindsight, a good move where they just said, hey, let's just do this with JSN. So Cooper Kupp, good enough, right? Good enough guy. I think Rashid Shaheed at the trade deadline was such a big move by Clint Kubiak to bring him back from New Orleans because they knew each other. So yeah, hand up again. I did not think it would go this well, right? Going to the Super Bowl looking like this. But Sam Darnold, for me, when he did come in, I thought bridge quarterback at best. And now, you know, he's in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, you know who's a guy we just completely forget exists is Jalen Milroe. You know,
yeah, Jalen, I was pumped for fantasy. I was like, oh, wait, Jalen Milroe packages this year? Like, let's dial it up.
We have a great job. I love having this job. It's better than having a real job. I say that all the time. But, you know, we waste a lot of time talking about dumb stuff in the offseason.
Yeah.
And definitely there's probably some times we discuss Jalen Milroe and like
not even a relevant person whatsoever.
And you know, that's good news for Seahawks fans because Sam Darnold had the year that he did. And a big reason that he did that is because of Jackson Smith and Jigba. We've talked about it a little bit. Let's dial in on JSN and sort of what went into his year three leap from a real life perspective, from a fantasy perspective. And while we do that, let's actually take a little look back to what someone on this show, actually wasn't on this show, it was on Football 301, but what someone said about Jaxon Smith-Njigba about 365 days ago. Let's see.
I think JSN leads the league in receiving next year.
Ooh.
I like that a lot.
I mean, obviously, already coming off a breakout year, he was disgustingly good in the second half of the season. I don't think people realize just how good he was, not just doing slot receiver things, but beating man coverage. Over 4 yards per route run against man coverage from week 10 on. And that was really where he won to me as a prospect, was in that intermediate middle of the field, outbreakers, inbreakers, specifically against man coverage. That's what made him like a clear cut, not a tier one prospect like these guys we've seen like last year, Neighbors and everybody like that. But I mean, that second tier down, which again, to me, is a clear first round prospect, somebody you can build your entire passing game around. And I think in this offense with Clint Kubiak, he will probably be that featured receiver, not like the typical Shanahan X receiver, like the Nico Collinses or the Ayukes or anything like that. But that guy that moves around the formation, can play inside out. I think he's just going to get loaded up with targets next year, especially because they've kind of already done the ceremonial goodbye for Tyler Lockett. I don't think he's a part of this team anymore, which I'm not really ready to come to terms with that because I love Tyler Lockett as a player, but it's been a slow decline for him. And I think there's a chance DK Metcalf's not on this team next year either.
Yeah, so listen.
Wow.
Jaxon Smith-Njigba leads the NFL in receiving yards. It was a bold prediction, okay? But this is the rule with bold prediction I say all the time. You get it wrong. Oh, well, it's just bold prediction. No big deal. But if you get it right, if you even get in the neighborhood of getting it right, you get to take the victory lap. You get to pat yourself on the back. So I've been patting myself on the back.
Oh, no, that was
this,
a good one.
Pretty much all week and actually really all season long. So listen, I got a lot of stuff wrong. I'm going to get way more things wrong going forward. So let me just have a little bit of fun with this. But yeah, I think part of the reason I was so optimistic about JSN, you mentioned it, it was that he showed the ability to not just be that slot receiver. Yeah. And it was a guy that, in his prospect profile for reception perception at Ohio State, and he brought this ability into the NFL, he was in over 75% success rate versus man coverage. And for people who aren't like familiar in depth, for whatever reason you listen to the show and you don't know about this stuff, 75% success rate versus man coverage and reception perception, that's awesome. Like, that means you can definitely play outside if you're given those opportunities. He was given those opportunities this year, and like, I'll be honest with you, he cooked in a way that I didn't even necessarily see coming, right? Especially from a downfield perspective.
Yeah, it was crazy because he was tagged the slot merchant, totally. Right? You're like, okay, in the slot. And that's, I remember talking with Dwayne McFarland about this in the offseason of like, what's this going to look like? Like, we were actually talking probably too much about Cooper Kupp and his role, because we thought, is Cooper Kupp going to take some stuff away, even with the age, even with everything else? And so with JSN being able to just not only be so elite, but you go out wide and he's got, I think it's a little over 1,300 yards when he's lined up out wide this year. And it's like this stat that you say, 1,378 of your yards is lined up outside, and you were able to do that. Like, it was so impressive. And I think it just shows that he's a guy. He's going to be an elite alpha wide receiver, and there's no coming back from this, because now I think, while we believe this is the standard, I really do think that that could be it for him. Like, this is one of those years where you see this leap and you just don't go back, where he's this receiver that we can continue to talk about year in and year out. Now, again, they're losing Clint Kubiak. Yeah. I do, you know.
Yeah, what's your level of concern with that?
Because, I'm kind of concerned. Yeah. Because when we think about it, when they lose offensive coordinators to head coaching jobs instead of offensive coordinators to offensive coordinator jobs, he's going to be taking people with him from Seattle, more than likely. And so when I look at that, I just look at JSN and what he was able to do. I look at the ground game with Kenneth Walker and what they were able to do there. And so to me, I say, hey, I'm a little bit nervous. I do think there's a standard that McDonald brings to this team where, again, you're not going to have to worry too much because he's just proven to be a really good head coach. But if Clint Kubiak goes and he brings the passing game coordinator, the quarterback's coach, like, there are some guys on this team that he's probably going to take with him, because, again, not an OC to OC job. He's a head coach for the Raiders now, more than likely right after Sunday. And so the guys that he brings with him, it's going to be interesting. Like, Callahan's still out there. Yeah. For like offensive coordinator, you know another name Cliff Kingsbury still out there, and I'll
Whoa,
you can
that
have
is
me.
A hard left turn from this type of
listen,
offense in this system.
Listen, I'll cry. You can have me back on the show to just cry live. But like, those are two.
I think it
like,
might be the first
names.
Time somebody's cried on the show. Usually,
well,
I'll be
really close if it's one of the. But like, those are the guys that are technically still out there. There are obviously some others, but like, that's what worries me, is that when he goes to be a head coach, who he brings with him, and how much. Like, how much change there is on the offensive side of the ball, really.
Man, that's That got doom and gloom pretty
quickly. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
And
Seahawks fans look away.
I'm going to continue it with a little bit here. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of when the Falcons and the Patriots were in the Super Bowl. You know, Kyle Shanahan, offensive coordinator for the Falcons, he moves on a late, you know, hire. Obviously, they're in the Super Bowl. He goes to San Francisco, and they kind of make this little bit of a weird, hard left turn there, and they hire Steve Sarkisian. And it's like, well, what did we really keep in terms of familiarity, in terms of the system, all of that? That will be interesting if they go that hard left turn here. Let's hope that doesn't happen, because honestly, this Seahawks offense just really it embodies the transition of these modern NFL offenses when they're going heavy, when they're taking advantage of the middle of the field. And like you mentioned, Cliff Kingsbury, and I was like,
please, we don't. I'm not even putting it out there anymore. I take it back.
Though, it was you. You pestered me.
He's still out there. He's not in. Where was he? Bermuda? No, where'd he go? Thailand.
Bangkok.
Thailand. Yeah, he's whatever, not. He's not in Thailand anymore.
I don't leave the United States, so I don't know about all that. But Justin Outen's a name that's actually interesting. I was talking with a Hawk blogger, was on their show with Brian the other day, and he mentioned he talked to Justin. He might be an internal promotion candidate. He's the assistant offensive line coach, run game specialist. He's a 10-year experienced coach, so that could be interesting. I do wonder if it is an internal promotion, if they go try to get somebody from the Shanahan tree or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, it comes back to, again, just this offense really weaponized JSN in such a fun and creative way. Like, one, we saw in the playoffs, then move JSN around, have those unique opportunities in the backfield from the slot, everything like that. But it's also when he has been that X receiver, you know, he's not just been that X receiver that, you know, back in like when I started charting receivers in 2014, you're that all the way boundary X, like, here's the sideline, you're right next to it on the line of scrimmage. It's like he's been the X, but it's been that condensed X receiver. So you still have all that space to work with. And that's what these modern NFL offensive coaches are doing. Now they're creating all that space. So it's a kind of a hand in glove fit here between what caused the year three leap for JSN. One, he's a baller. He's always been awesome, got even better, and was then weaponized by a really smart offensive line.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, keeping it in-house sounds a lot sexier for us in fantasy football, because we can see a path where they – and any coach that comes in, I feel like, is going to try to utilize him the same way. But you talk about the trees, you want to know where they come from and stuff. And just – I think it's just – unfortunately, hopefully they win on Sunday for me as a Hawks fan, and just for Clint Kubiak to be sent out in a great way. But, yeah, I'm really curious who they eventually bring in. If it's in-house, I think it – makes us feel a little bit better, probably, than the names that I gave us, because those were awful.
Yeah, that was those brutal.
I'm sorry. I still can't. I'm sorry. Well, you know, it's nightmares. It's replaying nightmares in my mind.
Sometimes it's good to, you know, set yourself up for disappointing so that you can be kind of like pleasantly surprised.
Exactly.
I think that does make sense. But let's flip this forward here and talk about who could be the next Jason, who could be a year three. I'll even say year three, year four, whatever, leap candidate here for you at the wide receiver position. When we're looking at some of those same variables, like, they're a baller, maybe a misunderstood player, but they're really good already. They take that next leap, and it could be because they're weaponized by a really smart offensive mind. So I'll give you the floor here. Okay. Anyone you want to throw out?
I feel like the chalky pick. So when I was looking it up, I was like, okay, who could we do here? I feel like the chalky pick is probably because he had such a down year is Ladd McConkey for the Chargers. Yeah. Like, that's chalk. So let's talk chalk first, because chalk is him because we like McDaniel coming in.
Totally.
I love the McDaniel hire. I was really excited about it. I think for us in fantasy football, we're excited about it because we know, like, he's creative. And I think people forget how creative he can be and just how he can just scheme guys open and just really work well with quarterbacks, because he was good with Tua Tagovailoa. Like, people don't want to remember it. You can look back at really bad Tua Tagovailoa clips, whatever, and replay them. But he was able to really get him going when he needed it. And when we look at the jump from Tua Tagovailoa, no offense, to Justin Herbert, like, night and day. So I'm really excited to see not only like what he creates in the environment he creates, but just how creative he can get with Justin Herbert, because I know you and Rank were talking about mm-hmm. them as, you know, a team that's going to be the fun team that we draft in fantasy. They're going to get expensive. I might be priced out. So I think the chalky pick is Ladd McConkey, because it does feel like not a little misunderstood, but just especially when we saw last season with Quentin Johnston, with Keenan Allen, like, it was just one of those things where you looked around and you said, where is Ladd McConkey? Like, what happened to this guy? So it does feel like someone that, because of how bad of a year he had last year, because of an offensive mind that's so creative coming in, that he could really be utilized way better next season.
Yeah, I'm talking to Ladd McConkey tomorrow, actually, on Radio Row. So I'm very excited to kind of hear his opinion about what he felt about that offense, what he felt about some of, you know, the down statistical season that he had. Because I don't know if you feel the same way, but watching him, I don't see anything like different. I don't see anything, any reason that he can't do something similar to JSN. I mean, you even look at him from a size perspective, neither one of them's that traditional,
yeah.
big old hulking outside receiver. They're both 6 foot. Ladd's a little lighter. I think he's listed 186. JSN's 197. So definitely the lighter of the two players. I think you probably need Ladd to play more in the slot just to avoid some of those press coverage looks on the boundary. But again, McDaniel has done such a great job taking Tyreek Hill and moving him around the formation previously. And I think obviously Ladd's not the same speed-based player, but he can get down the field. His best routes to me are in the intermediate area, which is where this passing game wants to flow, wants to function. So I just think there's going to be a lot more. You mentioned it's schemed up looks for these wide receivers. Number 15, Chief, and first and foremost.
Yeah. I think he's a good one. You know who I was thinking of? And I want your... It could get gross. So just, you know, we could roll the break or whatever.
I don't know if it can get any more gross than Cliff Kingsbury, Seahawks offensive coordinator.
Not my finest moment. But what, so Xavier Worthy, was he just that bad last year? Or is he someone with Eric Bieniemy coming back? Where if we're just talking year, I want to just strictly talk year three, because we could go year four, whatever. But Xavier Worthy, awful. Mm-hmm. Horrible. I mean, he was someone that did not get over 10 PPR fantasy points in the last 8 games except for one time. And he was someone that we said, hey, when he's coming up, this is going to be perfect because Rashee Rice had the suspension. He should be absolutely fantastic. He did get, you know, he did get hit by Travis Kelce. So we know he went with an injury a little bit. But I just think of myself and I'm like, is he really that bad? Could he be that? And I know he's never going to be the alpha guy there because you've got Rashee Rice. You've got maybe Travis Kelce coming back. But just to me, like not obviously breakout superstar, but Xavier Worthy with Bieniemy back, that team way more excited about what could come. I'm interested to see, what you think about him.
What do you think about the Bieniemy hire?
I don't hate it, to be honest with you. I actually quite enjoyed it because at least we know they're going to go deep a little bit more. Like we know what he's going to bring. And I think that's still really good for us in fantasy because they're going to be scoring more points. Because when we look at how they weren't scoring and how the last 2 years when they had everything going on, like they weren't scoring points. Points per game went down. Everything went down once Bieniemy left. So I didn't hate it for fantasy. Now, will that equate to wins? I'm unsure, but we don't care about wins. So
truly,
we're good.
I do wish that Andy had gotten a little out of his, own phone book. Right. Like some dudes he maybe just didn't know before.
And
I've made my thoughts known about the fact that they just soft fired Matt Nagy here. Yeah. It was truly one of the biggest gaslighting attempts we've ever seen from an NFL franchise. It truly drove me nuts. But be that as it may, they bring Bieniemy back in. I do think that if that's the case, if we're living in that same schematic world and we're hoping that Xavier Worthy can maybe not make a JSN level leap, but can have more than 532 receiving yards and one touchdown, I think it's going to have to come with yet another receiver addition in a weird way here, because this has been my problem with this Chiefs wide receiver core, even when they were winning games, even when they were in this game last year. It's just all these guys need so much role catering. Worthy was so much a perimeter option for them last year, and he weighs 165 pounds. Like, it's just like, that's not going to work. That's not his skill set. He needs to move around a little bit more. But Rashee Rice is a guy that, like, takes that role catering as well. So you kind of need, like, maybe a sacrificial X or just somebody that can be more of a, Alec Pierce is like, everybody should add Alec Pierce. Guess what? Only one NFL team is going to add Alec Pierce. But they need somebody kind of that archetype, of that variety, to allow them to move a guy like Worthy around. But then again, it's like volume concerns, everything like that.
So it's crowded.
It's just tough with like the making the math work, but I don't think he's as useless as he showed last year.
I'm like, look at the stats. That's horrible. My goodness. And we thought he was going to be great for what was the suspension? 6 games? Like, come on. Like, that was horrible.
I've always been a Worthy skeptic, but that was a little more dramatic than what we thought here. And obviously, once we got to the end of the season, it was just like everything was wrong with this team.
Yeah, just drop him, sit him, whatever.
I want to throw out Rome Odunze as a guy here that makes sense, too. Look, everybody watching the show knows I love Rome. I'm a big fan of his game. He certainly did not have the season that we expected last year. 90 targets, 44 catches. But a big part of what kind of ruined his season was the injuries. There's also drops and concerns at the catch point, too. It's just so crazy to me, Kendall, because I always liked his ability as a route runner, as a separator. Other people were more skeptical of that. I think we've seen his ability to get open. But as a prospect, his superpower, his trump card was his hands, the contested catch ability. Yeah. And then last year, it's like all of these struggles in contested situations. Do you think that's something that can normalize, with another year in the offense, another year with Caleb Williams? Because I think their chemistry has been a little hit and miss at times. Like, yeah. What do you kind of view Rome as one of these year three yeah. leap kind of candidates?
I love it. He was also on my list. I okay. promise. I'm not just copying you, but he is someone though that I think it can get normal with him, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think that the chemistry is always something you can work on, whether it's the off season or whatever. You always hear the stories. They go to, you know, book club. They go to the Breakfast Club, like Puka Nacua did. Remember that? You remember that?
I do remember that. I mean, I'll never forget
when
that.
When we heard that, we should have known. He was like, "Yeah, I'm going to breakfast with Cooper Kupp and
breakfast
Stafford."
Is the
I'm
best
like,
meal of the day.
Dang so. It! I should have known. That's true. That's a good call. But yeah, I do think with Rome, I just think that there's a shift, and we saw it. And I think that a good marriage with a quarterback and a new head coach, that takes time. But I also think learning that offense also takes time, mm-hmm. and you have to give them a little bit of credit, a little bit longer than maybe we would have liked. But I still think that's a crowded room of receivers. Yeah. Like, it's just
Rollin
I
Colson
think
Loveland, Luther Burden
exactly.
Breakout. Like,
yeah,
that could be a little bit of a math
and,
problem.
And
as well.
I think DJ Moore could be on the move, definitely. Right? I think he's gone. The money has to make sense, but you know, in the NFL, they're always able to get it. Yeah, doesn't that sound nice?
Joe Brady.
It seems too easy and it seems too simple, but for them to do that, right? It's obvious that Ben Johnson, he went into the draft and wanted to get young. They got young. They got Colson Loveland, right? And we sat here and we said, well, what about Cole Kmet? Cole Kmet doesn't matter. It's just, it's going to be Colson Loveland. Yeah. But I do think if and when DJ Moore does go, that does open things up where he just gets a little bit more comfortable in this offense. He gets more comfortable with Caleb Williams. Like, Luther Burden's going to be the guy that's going to be the most expensive to draft, in my opinion, next season off that team. Like, yeah. he's going to be expensive. We just have to know it now because he was just that good. And it's always a what have you done for me lately league. It's what have you done for me lately in fantasy. We're going to remember that. That's why he's going to be so expensive. That's why Kenneth Walker, after what he's shown us the last four games, is going to be expensive next year, even if he goes somewhere else. So I do think it's there for Roma Dunze. That's a good offense. Like, yeah. They're going to be the trendy offense, right? They're going to be the ones that maybe we're priced out of because we just say, I can't take, you know, Luther Burden in the third. I can't take Roma Dunze in the fifth. Like, yeah. I can't do it, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it in front of Rank because I think I was already gassing him up enough. But yeah, my answer to who do you want to draft from the 2026 Bears is just yes.
Like, exactly.
They're all good. actually, talking to Rome and DJ tomorrow as well.
Oh, nice. So everyone.
They keep me busy.
That
here.
Is so nice.
I gotta earn that paycheck, you know. Okay, I can't just be hanging around here in this nice looking office. But
it is nice.
I got some theories on some of the catching stuff with Rome. I want to run by him tomorrow, and so we'll see if he plays ball with that, or if he just, you know, he's mean to me.
Okay.
We'll see about
that.
Okay. No, we're cool. But when we look at some of the other candidates here, I'll throw some names out to you. Marvin Harrison. Brian Thomas Jr. You know, these are guys that I would say certainly haven't lived up to the expectations that we had of them this past year. BTJ, obviously, great rookie season. Mm-hmm. Marvin Harrison, you know, great draft capital. He's got a big name. Either of those two, do you think could maybe make this year three leap, or are you just kind of out at this point?
I really want, you know, I'm an optimistic person. I like to come into these things like being optimistic. I drafted BTJ way too much this season. That was awful. Thank you, Brian Thomas Jr. You can get better. But, like, to me, there's also rumors that he could be moved. Mm-hmm. And so if he's moved, it's kind of the idea of where he goes and if it's less crowded, because it doesn't feel like the chemistry is there with him and Lawrence. And I like that one. It's a little bit different than what we've seen with Roma Dunze, right? Where we say, hey, that can just get better. You've got a new head coach and everything. I just don't know if he fits a Liam Cohen offense, to be totally honest. Yeah. Like, I just don't know if he fits that. You go out and you get Jacoby Myers at the trade deadline, which at the time I was like, really? Wow. And then, you know, Travis Hunter goes down with an injury. So that was brutal. But it was one of those moves where you just say, where do you fit into this equation? And it might, and then Parker Washington has the great year that he does. So I don't even know if he fits with them anymore. That's the thing.
I'm with you that I think it probably takes a trade for him.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of offenses that could use him. So in that way, we can maybe follow back up on that and to see if he is one of these year three leap candidates. Well, a lot to discover here. I think we have discovered that we do still have some faith in this 2024 wide receiver class. It's still a talented group of players, but I always have faith that Kendall Valenzuela of Fantasy Life is going to bring it. And I really appreciate you hopping on the show today. Good luck to your Seahawks. And
thank you.
Good luck to the offensive coordinator search. Hopefully we do not see, you know, some of the doom and gloom that you and I both brought to the equation here come to pass.
Oh,
because,
gosh.
Man, it was such a fun offense to watch.
So
we're going to say goodbye to Kendall. She's got a busy schedule. She's got a lot to get to here. If you're watching with us on YouTube, though, stick around because we've got three great conversations coming up here. We've got CeeDee Lamb. We've got Christian McCaffrey. We've got Derrick Henry. You're going to hear a lot about ball. You're going to hear a lot about protein. You're going to hear a lot about slot receivers. I mean, it's going to be great. So stick around. We will see you right after this quick break. All right, we're back. We've got a big conversation here coming up. We've got CeeDee Lamb, Cowboys wide receiver. I sat down with him earlier. Tons of topics, including his and George Pickens' dynamic and their relationship. Let's take a listen to what CeeDee had to say. All right, joining us now is Cowboys wide receiver CeeDee Lamb. You're here on behalf of USAA. Appreciate you joining us, man. How's it going?
Oh, well, man. Appreciate you.
No doubt. All right, so this season for you, another great year. You did deal with a couple injuries. Give me kind of like not a grade, but just assessment of how this year went for you.
For me, I give it a C plus, B minus.
Okay. So you're a tough grader on yourself.
Absolutely. It was a cool year. Granted, I was able to make it out. I feel like that's the most important thing, and I feel like that's where I hang my hat. You know, I'm able to walk out the season perfectly fine. I'm able to sit in front of you without any injuries, any crazy ones, you know. But throughout the season, man, a high ankle sprain coming off a shoulder injury the year before, it was not the best feeling, nor was it the easiest. But I will say it taught me a lot mentally, helped me build some strength, some endurance, and more so confidence within myself that I can do it. I can play at an elite level while hurt or
the
injured.
The high ankle sprain, man, that is an injury, I think, for wide receivers. It gets really overlooked. That thing can, like, ruin your season if you let it.
It could ruin your career if you let it, if you don't treat it the right way. But as for me, I have a great team. Great recovery team. Shout out my doctors.
Yeah.
And everybody. I put them to work for 3 weeks straight, and they understand. My emphasis was to get back. They knew I wanted to rush and get back, but that wasn't the smartest thing.
No doubt. So we've talked previously, actually, about how one thing I really love about your game is the ability to not just play but dominate at all three receiver positions. I feel like with George in town this year, maybe your role was a little bit different. Any differences in how you played this year, how you were deployed, or is that just kind of me seeing things?
Nah. I mean, I don't think it was much different. I feel like George is a dominant X receiver, so like it was no need for me to go there.
Right.
I'll go do everything else. I'll go to the slot. I'll go play Z. I'll go to the strong side. And G, man, he's amazing. He's an outside receiver. He can get in the slot too.
Yeah,
you gotta find our matchups and gotta expose him.
Yeah, I think he took like 7.5% snaps from the slot this year, which is crazy to have that level of production while not getting some of those kind of like layup looks more so from the slot.
Right, more on the outside, man. You get one-on-one coverage. You get favorable matchups. I feel like people kind of get it confused and think the slot's the easiest. Man, you got to beat more people.
Yeah.
Honestly. And on the outside, granted, the competition's more elite.
Sure.
But it's just one guy.
Right. So kind of talk to people about like what goes into getting separation, getting open as that slot receiver.
At the slot receiver position, you got to win twice. You got to win at the beginning of the route, and then you got to win at the end of the route. Mandatorily. And then I will say it's much easier because your quarterback can go from outside to tight end to you. So you have more time in that department. I feel like that's where it kind of get easy, you know. But on the outside, you got to win now, and then the ball is out now. You know, you beat in a rush. So I feel like it's a little sped up on the outside. You got to win quicker. But on the slot, you got to win more times.
And again, what's good about you is you're able to do either, which makes you one of the best receivers in the league is being able to do it. That's kind of the thing I think has changed about the receiver position. For me, I started studying receivers in depth in 2014. You came to the league in 2020. Even from that time period, a lot has changed. I feel like just from 2020, with the way defenses has changed, offensive structures have changed, we've seen a lot of different ways that receivers like have to be deployed, and you got to do more than just one or two things. You got to be able to do four or five.
Right. If you want to be effective in this game now, the game's going to elevate every single year, and defensive coordinators get smarter every single year. They find different ways of matching up. They find different ways of bracketing, covering these guys, and I feel like it's they don't get enough credit for it. Like, they get mad creative, and it's elite.
I mean, we're watching the Seahawks defense coming up in the Super Bowl. That's one that's certainly – I don't think you guys didn't play them this year, but You see them next year. Like, what goes into a defense like that that is so – they can play nickel to everything because of some of their personnel, but also the way their scheme works. Kind of tell people what you as a receiver have to do in order to defeat that type of defense.
You got
to
master aggressiveness. I feel like those guys are – they are no slacks. They have young guys all in the DB area, and they play with a lot of intensity and a lot of energy. You know, so when you're going in the game, you got to be ready to battle. You're going to be some smack talk every now and then, but that's just part of the game, you know. So I feel like those guys, they're nice. They're playing together. They're flying around. They got a good D-line. I feel like across the board, that defense is flying.
Yeah, they're like that amoeba secondary where everything kind of moves as one, and that makes it challenging for any type of offense. Going back to George here for a second, what
What do you think was kind of misunderstood about George Pickens prior to him arriving in Dallas?
I feel like they thought he was really just only a hothead, and he can't. I don't know. It was so many things that I feel like that was misunderstood. They felt like his attitude was off. They felt like he was not locked in. They felt like he's not reliable. They felt like a whole lot of things that's not really the case. Granted, he got in the league. He really played 1 year of college and then entered the draft, because the year after was COVID for him.
Yeah.
So he had entered the draft. And, I mean, he come in the league at 19 years old. What do you expect out of a guy, and you want him to be your receiver one?
Right.
So, like, that's kind of crazy. But – as for him, he grew up in those years, and I'm proud of him for that. I tell him every time that we have these type of conversations, like, bro, the way that you switch, like, you flipped the switch immediately as soon as you got here, you make me look like I knew what I was doing. You know, granted, I'm not saying I didn't, but I knew how to, like, tame him in a sense, because
sure.
I am young. I just got out of my rookie deal, so just keeping him within the guidelines, letting him be himself at the same time, I feel like it was probably the best thing for him. And I knew that it was gonna have him comfortable here in Dallas.
No doubt. And, like, that, I think, gets lost, that you guys come into the league so young.
Right.
And, like, man, I'll tell you what, as a 19, 20-year-old, I don't want to be judged by some of the things then as the man I am now. And I think
right.
you guys certainly experienced that while you're growing up, playing a high degree of difficulty sport, high demanding
right.
career. So that gets lost on people, I think. And I think George is a really good example of that we saw not just maybe you can speak to a different person more than I can, but even on the field, I mean, he's so much better now than
yeah.
he was in those first couple of years in Pittsburgh. And I think he needs a lot of credit for that
mm-hmm.
growth.
He need a lot of it for his growth. Just as loud as the disrespect was, he need the credit for his growth. He's a heck of a player, as we all know. And then the way that he practices is amazing. I'm real big. I'm a real practice player. Like, I love to get better. And so does he. Every time we get an opportunity to step on that field, we already know what it is. It's time to work. It's time to get better. And for us to keep that same mindset, it puts each other, push each other every opportunity that we can. I feel like that's how we're going to get the best out of each other. That's how we're going to be the best for years to come. And they got to deal with us for some time.
Yeah, let's keep George Pickens in Dallas. That is, I'm sure, the message that you would like to hear.
Please.
Like I said, I'd study the receiver position in depth, so I'm not just looking at the CeeDee Lambs, looking at the George Pickens. I want to ask you about Ryan Flournoy, another
okay.
receiver for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yep.
I think he's really underrated, really good player, a strong route runner, gets a lot of separation. What do people not know about Ryan Flournoy that they should know?
He is really underrated, but that's how it goes. You got to start somewhere.
Sure.
And as for Flo, I told him his opportunity is going to come. We're going to need him in games like this. Like, in the playoffs, guys like Flo,
mm-hmm.
guys like Schoonmaker, we're going to need everyone to step up. Everybody know we have CeeDee, we have George Pickens, we have Tay,
yeah.
we have Dak, we have Ferg. But, like, it's the counterparts. It's, like, the small things. We need everybody to step up together and as a unit. And overall, we'll all look like we know what we're doing.
Yeah, and when you're one of these teams, too, that doesn't make the playoffs this year, but that
right.
was both of these teams, Patriots, Seahawks. They didn't make the playoffs last year.
Right.
You guys are kind of hoping to be one of those teams that, hey, you go from not making the playoffs into the Super Bowl next year. What do you think has to happen for Dallas to get there?
Man, we got to be consistent, man. We got to be who we say we are. I feel like it's a lot of talk once we start winning. We just gotta keep our head down and continue to work. I feel like we be consistent in every department. We stay healthy. And, man, we gonna thrive. You just got to keep the band together for one. And then let's go get some stops and let's go put up some points.
I mean, I think that sounds like a pretty good message there. Hey, you're here on behalf of USA. Tell the people what you got going on with them.
Okay, perfect. I'm excited. Sergeant Farrell and his wife, I'm excited to invite them to the Super Bowl, 14-year tenured Purple Heart recipient. And a salute to service partnership with the NFL and the Super Bowl. So really excited to have them here. And I'm looking forward to seeing him.
No doubt. Sounds absolutely awesome. CeeDee, appreciate your time, man. Good luck this offseason. Stay healthy and get ready to crush it next year, man.
For sure. Appreciate it.
Great conversation with CeeDee Lamb. I'm still thinking about that. We got to win twice as the slot receiver. That was such a good line. I'm going to be thinking about that a lot when I'm looking at players and prospects. Next up, though, another big-time conversation with Christian McCaffrey. You guys are going to absolutely love this one. This was a real treat. Let's see what Christian had to say. Very excited to be joined now by 49ers star running back Christian McCaffrey. Christian, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much, man. Appreciate you having me on.
You're here on behalf of Olipop. Very excited to talk about that because, spoiler alert, I'm a consumer. So we're gonna talk about that a little bit later. But I got to ask you, man, what is the question that you've been getting so far that you're sick of being asked?
I'm still early in the process. I'm not sick of being asked anything yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good so far. You ask me in about a couple hours, I'm sure I'll have answers for you.
I was going to say, well, hopefully we don't start off with one here.
Something fantasy related?
I got nothing fantasy related for you. Okay. So, okay,
then,
there we go.
Perfect. Maybe it's good.
Okay, well, maybe. We'll see. All right, Christian, this past year you had 480 combined targets, rush attempts in the regular season and the playoffs. That is the fourth most for a running back since the year 2000. And spoiler alert on the rest of the list, it's a lot of guys that aren't, you know, playing now. It's very unusual for a running back to get that level of workload in today's game. Number one, like, how are you feeling? Number two, how do you keep yourself in shape to be able to handle that level of workload?
No, I feel great. I think, you know, when you know that that's the workload that you're going to have, you know, you prep for it, you know, and all offseason you train for it. And that's why you work so hard in the offseason. I always say, you know, the offseason is really where you build the foundation that lasts throughout the season. You know, football is inevitable, man. Injuries happen. Sometimes you get rolled up on bad and stuff happens. But, you know, the better prepared you can be, which starts really, you know, at the in February and into March, the quicker you can get that going and get that process going to build that base so that throughout the season you can withstand the storm, you know, the better it is.
Yeah, and you guys are always – I feel like there's always something I read about NFL players where it's like, man, they're doing that from a training perspective, from a recovery perspective. Honestly, I'm not nearly taking the damage that you are, but I'm trying to do the best for my health. I'm taking some notes every here and now again. Like, what do you got that's like a recovery thing or something that you're doing that might take people by surprise?
Man, it's a good question because, you know, and I'm always slow to answer that question because there's such a big menu of items that can help. And it's very specific and pertinent to what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, for someone like myself, it's more of understanding conceptually what you're trying to achieve and then doing whatever it takes to get there. You know, sometimes you don't have access to all of the modalities and all of the tools, but there's different ways to find it. But I always say, man, the best way to you know, stay in shape is move and eat correctly and sleep correctly and do the fundamentals. As many gadgets as there are in the world now, it's always the fundamentals that if you don't do those correctly, those gadgets aren't going to have the same effect. And so it's really a year-long dedication to trying to do, you know, the right thing and every single thing you're doing. I also have incredible people on my staff.
Sure.
I think people forget it. You know, we have full staffs individually of people, of trainers, bodywork maintenance people, chiropractors, chefs, whatever it may be. You know, that's our job, is to invest in our bodies. So, you know, I have a great team, and they make it really easy for me to just trust what they're doing and execute.
It is about those fundamentals. I mean, I say it all the time on my show. Hey, good nutritious breakfast to start the day, walk immediately afterwards, then I'm a good person the rest of the day. If I don't get those two things in, I might be a real mess the rest
of
the day.
But that's good you found that. You know, a lot of people have, you know, that's another thing. These guys, they're Hall of Famers that train completely different than me. They might have different schedules, different routines, but it works for them. And I think that's part of it too, is routine, consistency, and finding what works for you.
Okay, so talking to just about me and sort of some of my work. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you, but I do a charting series called Reception Perception on wide receivers. I chart route running for these guys, where they line up, which type of route concepts they're running from which positions, how often you're getting open against man zone press coverage. But some of the feedback I get from viewers, subscribers, whatever, is that I don't chart these other positions, just wide receivers, no tight ends, no running backs. You are the most prolific receiving running back in the league. Do you think I am making a mistake by not grouping in some of these running backs like yourself with the wide receivers?
Well, I think you can always add. I don't know if you're making a mistake, because that is good information, but if there's one thing I've learned about football, is that every position affects the other position
right.
In ways, you know. And so if you have a guy like a Bijan or a Kamara or myself or whoever it may be, you know, it feels like every back in the league now, Gibbs, they can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at how it affects a defense and how it affects the receivers, it's a big deal. You know, coordinators are all about matchups now and matchup
right.
issues. And so space is not only dictated off of just, you know, can this guy beat man-to-man coverage? Well, there's not every defense is playing man-to-man coverage. And so some of the statistics behind, you know, I guess football stats,
sure.
They're way deeper. There's way more depth into why certain things are happening. And a lot of it's based off of scheme and matchups and putting guys in positions to win. You know, I think that's something that that's why to me the best statistic you can look at when it comes to football is simply watching the tape.
Right.
And you can really see how things affect other things, right? Stats are a tool and they're one way to look at the game, but the silent tape and watching the game is the best way to learn football.
Even as somebody that is charting all of that film and trying to quantify something that's inherently qualitative, you have to admit that there's no way to perfectly isolate everything in football. And especially in today's game, you mentioned this, like, defenses have really shifted from some of the more traditional just man coverage looks to, you know, whether it's quarters or just more zoned up looks. I mean, it's the receiver position and just the passing game in general in the NFL is so much different than when I started covering the league in 2014. Like, what do you think, as one of the best offensive players in the league, has sort of gone into that transition from the defensive side of it?
Well, the rule changes are big, and I think, you know, when you look at the history of the NFL and the trends of it, you know, back in the day, there was big bruising-type running backs. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the matchups, again, all about matchups, you would have big bruising-type linebackers.
Sure.
Well, somewhere along the line, the game slowly started to change to more of a passing league where running backs now are running routes on big bruising linebackers. Well, now teams are drafting linebackers that run 4-4 that might be a little smaller, but they can hit. It's not like they can't hit. Mm-hmm. And so it's getting faster. It's getting stronger. And you know, the way it works is now all of a sudden you have these smaller defenses. Well, a guy like Derrick Henry is going to have 1,500 every year because he's a you know, how do you stop the run with 215, 218, 220-pound linebackers when he's 250? And so it's really about matchups and what you want to commit your scheme to, who you want to be. And, you know, from a defensive side, they're running, you know, the creativity is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
But to me, the fundamentals of attitude, of effort, of blocking and tackling will be true in football for the rest of time. And so the more you can get guys who do the fundamentals correctly to buy into your scheme, whether it's offensively or defensively, the better your team, in my opinion, is going to be.
This year, we saw more teams move to some more heavier personnel packages, whether it was more tight ends on the field, more 12 personnel, 13 personnel, in your division especially. But I feel like Kyle Shanahan with the 49ers has kind of been skewing into that more than other offenses, really, since he got to San Francisco. And I think maybe a little bit ahead of the trend there. Do you notice that stuff as well when you're looking across the league? And how do you think the game has changed because of those heavier personnel packages?
Yeah, well, coaches are having to adapt way quicker. You know, you have full off seasons to prepare, especially when you're talking about football in your division. You know, if you're a really good, you know, wide zone team, or you're a really good, whatever it may be, scheme, you know, teams have all offseason to, hey, we, you know, this is what we want to stop. This is what we want to do to try to defend it. And so adaptability and being proactive in that is huge. You know, being able to kind of see where the trends are going and adjust to them and then get your players to buy into that, and kind of matching your players with your scheme. I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges of football, because you don't have 100 guys. You got to, you know, and you don't have all the cap and all these other, whatever it may be. So that's but you know, you said it best. It's, there's too many variables to put football into one box. I think that's why it's the coolest sport to watch.
That's why it's so fun to cover, man.
It really is any given Sunday. It really is unpredictable. Each game has a life of its own, and I think that's why people love it. You never know what's going to happen.
So I mentioned you are probably the most prolific receiving running back in the NFL, especially when you're just watching a guy as a true route runner doing more wide receiver-ish things at the running back position. I would say Bijan Robinson is probably second best to me right now. Like, he's closest to you in that regard. He's somebody we're going to have on the set tomorrow. What do you think of him as sort of in that same variety of a Christian McCaffrey type receiving back?
Well, I got to train with him this summer, and you know, it was such a cool opportunity for me because I saw it firsthand of what makes him so special. And then you watch his season and how it played out this year. But man, he's unbelievable. You know, he can really do anything and do it well. He's not just somebody who does everything good. He does everything great.
Yeah.
And that's why he's such an effective offensive weapon and a, you know, a generational talent. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have enough good things to say about him. And he's the best guy, too. I mean, when you have somebody that's such a star and is that humble and, you know, it makes you want to root for him.
No doubt. It's pretty cool to see. I mentioned I'm a receiver guy. That's mostly what I focus on. One of the receivers on your team that I think people don't understand how good he is Ricky Pearsall. Man, it's like, tell us about Ricky Pearsall, like, both as a player, as a person, because I think, like, he's just scratching the surface of what he can be. I think he's such a great route runner, so explosive. Tell the people about Ricky Pearsall what you think about him.
Yeah, Ricky's amazing, man. There's nothing he can't do. He really is a special player. You know, I think he had such a tough start to his career, and you know, obviously all the stuff that happened was so unfortunate. But I see him every day, and, you know, he works so hard. He wants to be great. He has the perfect attitude you would want in a receiver, willing to do anything. wants to be out there and just a gift to have in the locker room, man. And you said it, he's scratching the surface. He's already so good, but he can only get better, and it's going to be so fun to watch because I think he really is a hell of a player.
You said the word willing. That to me is like, you got to be willing as a receiver to do a lot of different things in today's game. Play multiple positions, get involved in the run game, clear things out. You mentioned 11 guys working as one. That's one of the like underrated words for wide receiver now. You got to be willing to do multiple things.
Yeah, you know, in offenses now, receivers are a lot of times the ones that make those big runs happen. Mm. Because once you get past the first and second level, if the receivers get, you know, hands on these DBs, there's so much space. But also it ties into some of the play actions. If you're, you know, push cracking a safety and you make that look the exact same as you do, you know, a certain route, well, now it helps you out. So, you know, you get rewarded for blocking correctly in the receiving game if you have the right play caller. But, you know, the sacrificial clear routes, that's a whole aspect of the NFL that people don't understand either. You know, you're running this is a for the love of the game route. You know you're not getting the ball, but you're getting your brother open on a corner or something like that. Those are big deals, man. And those are the sacrificial plays that I think don't get talked about enough. But those are the plays that make football fun and make it where you have generational talent type players who are doing that. And when your best players are doing that, it trickles down. It's like, okay, if I want to be great, this is the kind of stuff I have to do. So those are the culture setting plays.
For the podcast listeners, I'm laughing, I'm smiling over here because you said sacrificial. This is the thing I've been saying for like the last 3 years. Like the sacrificial X receiver is really, it's an expanding role now that I know it doesn't put the fantasy points up or anything, but that's bringing the entire offense together. So I love that you actually just literally used the word sacrificial. That's very funny. Okay, you're here on behalf of Olipop. Tell the people what you got going on there.
Yeah, man, I partnered with Olipop. Easy partnership for me. Yeah. I drink them all the time. But, you know, as somebody that's health conscious, it's a soda that you can feel good about drinking.
Yeah.
You know, super minimal sugar, high in fiber. It's a prebiotic drink. Super, you know, it's really good for you. And it tastes incredible. You know, I think a lot of times you get these drinks that they're supposed to be healthy, and then, you know, they taste healthy. They taste like, I can tell they're trying.
Yeah.
But it's not like that with Olipop, and that's why it's so cool for me. It's the best treat of the day.
Favorite flavor?
Well, I love root beer, but I'll be honest, my favorite flavor is crisp apple.
Mm, okay.
Underrated flavor, and people don't talk about it because you hear about the colas, you hear about the root beers, but try the crisp apple. It's refreshing as ever.
I'm a vintage cola guy myself because I gave up
classic.
I gave up drinking soda like, I think like 2013, like over a decade ago. So it's like, ooh, this is a nice little treat. Nice little treat. And, you know, you got to feel good about the gut health. That's very important, people. Hey, Christian McCaffrey, appreciate you stopping by, man. Have a good offseason. Stay healthy. Look forward to watching next year.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Awesome conversation there with Christian McCaffrey. What a good transition here, too. We're going to go from fiber to protein with Derrick Henry coming up next. And what ranking is correct in terms of your chip dip situation? Yeah, the hard-hitting topics, we're going to cover those with Derrick Henry. Let's see what he had to say. Very excited now to be joined by Derrick Henry here. Derrick, what's going on, man? You're here with Oikos Yogurt. What's going on?
Yeah, man, thank y'all for having me. Yeah, on here on behalf of Oikos, which I'm excited to be a part of, to be a good opportunity to be in their big commercial for the big game, my first Super Bowl commercial, which I'm excited about, with Catherine Hahn, the big superstar. So I wasn't even the big star in the commercial. It was her. But I'm grateful and appreciative to be a part of it on behalf of Oikos, to encourage people to try the Oikos product, which gives you strength, high in protein, great to fuel you. And it fuels me on and off the field, which I need protein to perform at a high level. And the new product they have, the Greek yogurt, 000, high in protein, packed with protein.
Ooh.
And it's a great snack to have. Or if you don't want to have it as a snack, have something for lunch to fuel you and have you feeling good. However you eat Greek yogurt, whether you add to it or just have it by itself, Oikos is what you need.
What a pro, man. I mean, listen, protein matters, okay? I'm trying to hit.
Definitely me. Does. That's if you're trying to get big. You're trying
that's
to get
right,
swole.
Dude. I'm trying to look like half as good as you here. You
got
know?
It, man. You got
dude,
the muscles. Look
I
at
appreciate.
You.
I appreciate you, man. Derrick, we were talking about before we got on here, before we get to some of the, you know, serious football stuff, you know, big time topics. We were talking about the first time we met was down at the draft in Nashville back when you were with the Titans. We played a little game of how to rank your queso, guac, yes, salsa. I actually have the video. I have the video. I'm gonna play it for you here, and we can decide if we still stand by some of our takes.
I probably do.
Well, we'll see, man. Okay, so I'm gonna let you watch this.
I need you to rank 1 to 3, best to worst, things to dip your Tostitos chip in.
By the way, we look really young. we look young here.
I would say queso, salsa. I don't like guacamole, so that's last.
Okay, well, I have to inform you, you did give the wrong answer, and you actually got it completely backwards. It's actually guac is number one.
No.
Salsa, then no. Queso. No. Queso is so hit or miss. Like, you can get some really good queso, but like last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
Well, the queso I had has always been pretty good. I've never had no bad queso, really. And salsa, you can't go wrong with that. Guac, I'm just not a fan of.
Well, that's fair. I guess we can agree to disagree on that point.
Well, I got to say, my analysis of this, I'm sure you've got some thoughts. Number one, I miss that hair. I miss your hair too, frankly, from that. You know, the big ponytail. That was pretty electric. Number two, I think we've aged well. I think we look better now than we did then.
Way better.
Dude, we look way better. And we've, I think we've both better spoken. Our careers have both, I don't want to speak for you. I think it's pretty clear, though. I think both of our careers is really taken off
for
here.
Sure.
We've done well for ourselves. The other thing is, I'm actually willing to acquiesce to your point. At that point in my life, I was living in L.A., so I was just constantly just good guac, good guac, good guac. I live back east now. I have had some bad guac since then. So you know what, Derek? All these years later, I want to tell you that you were right. I was wrong.
So what's your order now?
Now I think I would go salsa number one. I would go queso number two. And I would go guac number three at this point.
Okay, that's not bad. That's not
too bad. The reality of it is, man, it's just the variance of it. At the time, I thought, you know, queso was the highest variance. But now, again, that I've been back on the East Coast, I have had some truly abysmal guac. Just don't do it like they did back in L.A. So I think I'm ready to change my mind.
I still feel the same as I did in 2019. Not changed at all.
When you're right, you're right. There's that. Okay, Derek, one thing has not changed either is you're still a beast on the football field, man. Your longevity is absolutely outstanding. The fact that kind of, you know, people are like, this is a little bit of a, you know, ho-hum season for Derrick Henry. Oh, it's not the same Derrick Henry as years past. I'm like, dude, this guy had over 1,700 total yards, 16 touchdowns. He's top 10 all-time in rushing yards. You're still crushing it. How have you been able to maintain that level of longevity and playing at a high level at this age for a running back?
Yeah, I think it's just wanting to be better than the year before. Staying hungry, staying motivated. You know, I love working and love putting the work in to go out there and perform at a high level. And you know, I've been in this game, you know, going, this will be my 11th season. I want to win the Super Bowl too. So,
yeah,
that's the main goal is winning the Super Bowl. And anything that comes with it, I'm grateful and blessed to receive. But Super Bowl has been on my mind for forever. But really on my mind now.
Yeah, still keeping the main thing, which is the Super Bowl. And, you know, this Ravens team was kind of projected by many to be in this game, and we just didn't have that type of season. What was your analysis of sort of what went right, what went wrong this season?
Yeah, I mean, of course we got hit with the injury bug. A lot of guys went down.
Yeah.
Then we got some guys back, and we went on a roll. But obviously, when it comes down to it, just wasn't good enough from us as a whole. Like you said, being picked the preseason Super Bowl champs and not even going to the playoffs is just a huge and a disappointing season, which we all own and take accountability for. But I think also, you know, going through something like that and using it as motivation and then coming into this next season, not letting that and those results happen again and letting it fuel you and motivate you. And I'm sure everybody who's on the roster and a part of the organization is definitely motivated from this last year.
One guy I got to ask you about is, you know, now your former offensive coordinator, Todd Monken, going to be the head coach for the Cleveland Browns. People were kind of surprised by that hire, but man, I've watched this offense, especially the run game. It's been pretty dynamic the last few years. What do you think Browns fans can expect with Monken as the new head coach there?
He's a great offensive mind. different variations of what he throws at you with different guys and their abilities. And, you know, he's had success with the Ravens organization with us as an offense. And I think those guys should be excited on the offensive side of the ball of getting an opportunity with a great offensive mind who comes in there hungry and want to do something great.
He's got a lot of pop too, it feels like. Behind the mic, it feels like he's got a lot of pop, a lot of energy too. So that should be pretty fun to watch. Sure. With you, Derek, what do you think people don't know about Derrick Henry that they should, whether the football player, the individual, you know, because we're Yahoo Sports, we do fantasy, right? Of course. And I think sometimes with fantasy, it becomes a little bit of like, well, you're just looking at players, you're looking at numbers. But I like to give the listeners and the viewers sort of a glimpse of who you are as a guy. And I think we can understand you're pretty, we're having fun here. We're talking chips, we're talking guac, we're talking queso.
For sure.
What's something about you that people don't know that they should?
What's like the sport? Aspect,
anything. Maybe you as a person, you as a football player, either way.
Well, if we're going to get it to me as a person, one thing that people don't know, and I just got that question, I think, a couple of interviews ago, is I love learning about animals.
Really?
Yes.
What's your favorite animal?
My dream is to go to Africa and do the safari. My favorite animal is a lion. I love learning about big cats. I love learning about animals. I want to do that one day.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't? That's pretty electric stuff. I mean, okay, so lion number one, what's your 2-3 ranking, top three animal rankings?
Lion number one, like I said, I'm a big cat person. I would say jaguar number two, and then number three.
There's a lot of animals to pick from.
That's hard. I don't know, I guess.
If you just want to leave the top two, that's fine. You don't want to leave too many animals off your top three ranking.
I think I'll say number three, like a honey badger. Because they don't care who you is. They ain't soft now.
They'll mess your day up.
Yeah, they don't care. You can be whatever animal you want to be. They still going to hold their ground. So I'll probably say number three, honey badger.
Awesome. Derrick Henry, Baltimore Ravens running back here on behalf of Oikos. People, get your protein in out there so you can look like Derrick Henry.
Get your protein so you have strength.
That's
Oikos.
Right.
Oikos.
You could either look like a pro NFL running back or, you know, a solid 6 out of 10, you know, getting it decent done like myself here. Derek, appreciate your time, brother.
Thank
Always
you
good to see
me,
you, man.
Always enjoy it.
Oh, man. What a show. Thank you to Adam Rank. Thank you to Kendall Valenzuela. Thank you to Derrick Henry, CeeDee Lamb, Christian McCaffrey, and all of you out there who tuned in for this one. That is going to do it for today's show. And while the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast won't be back until Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern with Scott Pianowski for our Super Bowl recap, we have so much stuff here at Yahoo coming up all week from San Francisco. You can subscribe to the Yahoo Fantasy YouTube channel to check out all of my other player interviews. We've got a ton of great guests coming up. And also, Football 301 is going to be live at 5 p.m. Eastern tomorrow for a big, fat, the fattest Super Bowl preview, the deepest, most disgusting, just the fattest Super Bowl preview you could possibly imagine here on Football 301. That's going to be tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern. You can check us out on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. So like I said, that's going to do it for us here today. We will be back on Monday live at 2 p.m. Eastern with Scott Pianowski. Can't wait to see what he has to say about the upcoming Super Bowl matchup. Good luck to all of you out there. Until then, we are out.